Last time when we were gathered together, we were looking at the section on the core curriculum for disciples, looking at Sermon on the Mount. Talked a little bit about the sermon, its early emphasis, and how in this Jesus says it's not just enough to look at everything that he has commanded, but to do whatsoever I've commanded. Not only does he say that throughout the Sermon on the Mount, but in the Great Commission in Matthew 28, we have the same thing about making disciples. But he does say in the Sermon on the Mount that not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom, but those who do the will of my Father who sent me. We also find that he says that those who hear his commandments and do them or act upon them are like the wise man, as opposed to those who don't act. They might hear them, the commandments, but don't act upon them. And we talked about the machaerisms that are in the statements of blessing. That is an internal kind of blessing that are typical of these kinds of discourses, but especially with Jesus and the word makarioi, or blessed, or blessed, sometimes translated happy, is here in the Beatitudes. It's in the plural. We find that happy kind of doesn't, and we've talked briefly last time when a couple of questions were asked about the fact that translating it as happy doesn't necessarily capture the true meaning of what Jesus was trying to say. Happiness can be something that is totally external. But being blessed is something that comes from God from within. That blessing from God comes from within. Happiness can be dependent on emotions and outer circumstances. Blessedness depends on God and God's favor and involves an assurance of and trust in God's grace, especially when things are tough. Especially when things are tough. And Jesus is talking to people who are in some pretty dire straits, with the Roman Empire the way it is, and lack of jobs, lack of food, all too high taxes, all kinds of things that do that, plus diseases that take place. And so Jesus here is talking about this, and there's a mixture in the Beatitudes. There's a mixture of eschatological hope, that is, at the end, the eschaton, the end, hope and blessing at the end of the age, with the realities of earthly circumstances, and that there can be hope and blessing even in earthly circumstances. In the kingdom of God, or as he calls it, the kingdom of heaven, literally the kingdom of the heavens. As I said before, Matthew never uses heaven in the singular. Matthew always uses heaven in the plural. But we talked about that whole idea that God is God above all realms, not just a few. But for those who are in the kingdom of the heavens or the kingdom of God, the kingdom will be theirs. They will inherit the earth. They will be comforted. They will be filled with righteousness. They will receive mercy. They will see God and will be called children of God eventually. Sometimes we may get glimpses of that in this life, but in part that's dependent upon how we approach it and if we look for that. So here Jesus is promising there will be a point where you will inherit the kingdom of the heavens. You will be comforted, all of these things. But a lot of the folks to whom he is speaking are probably thinking, well, wait a minute, in the meantime, what does that mean? Well, Jesus is also very much a realist here. We oftentimes spiritualize these things too much. Jesus is a realist. Jesus is a realist. In the present or the meantime, your condition may be you're the poor in spirit. In the Gospel of Luke, it may be you're the poor. But here in Matthew, you're the poor in spirit. On this earth, you may be those who mourn. You may be the meek. You may be the persecuted for righteousness' sake. You may find travail on earth, but you may also find blessing. Why? Because you're the merciful. And you'll receive mercy. You're the pure in heart. You will see God. You're the peacemakers. You know, peacemaking doesn't seem to be really a very popular thing these days. People seek to make peace by doing what? Making war, or at least the threat of war. It's really kind of interesting. I joke around a lot of times about Confucius and make up some of my own. You know, man who living, the old one was man who live in glass house must be careful about throwing stones. But my warped take on it was man who live in glass house must not undress with the lights on. What's really interesting is Confucius in his philosophy believed that the lack of traditions and customs was what was responsible for all the problems in society. And if one returned to the traditions and the customs and kept them properly, then there would be no need for laws and no need for threats because everyone would be deferential toward everyone else. Everyone would seek the good of the other before their own good. So that's Jesus says, yeah, but if you're the merciful, you will receive mercy. Now, maybe not always from the folks around you. If you're the peacemakers, you'll be called children of God. Maybe not necessarily by some of the folks around you. They may try and take advantage of you. But the blessedness will come from God. Here in the Beatitudes, blessedness also describes a condition of the human heart, the human spirit. When we are connected by God's grace and with God's grace and spirit. In fact, we could read here, because you are blessed, you can be children of God. Because you are blessed to be peacemakers, you can be children of God. Because you are blessed, you can be those who mourn and find comfort. Because you are blessed, you can be the meek and inherit the earth. All of these different things in here. This whole idea of this community. Blessed are the poor in spirit. And as I said briefly last time, some of these, they build on each other. The poor in spirit, the mournful, are those who mourn. And we usually use that around a funeral, right? The loss of a loved one at a funeral. And while that fits, and I think it's very appropriate, looking here at Matthew with this, the poor in spirit are those who also mourn over the fact that they are the poor in spirit and there are other sins around them. It causes them a sense of mourning. The meek, those who are meek, it's not Don Knotts and the Ghost of Mr. Chicken or somebody that can't beat the way out of a wet noodle. Meekness is a true sense of humility. It comes out of the idea that you have power and you have connection to power, but rather than use it for your own benefit, you are humble enough to use it for others. And Jesus says eventually, if you know that old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, that anonymous saying, Jesus says if you don't take that, but rather you're the meek, that is the humble, you know you've got power, you know that you can use it, but rather than use it for yourself and abuse it, you use it on behalf of others, he said eventually you will inherit the earth. You're not going to be corrupted by that power. Now, we're talking about a real humility, not a sense of false humility. You know, there are people out there that their greatest characteristic and asset is their humility. Just ask them, they'll tell you. That's a false sense of humility. But this whole idea of meekness is not being scared of your own shadow, but rather than being controlled by the urges and the power that you have, you humbly control the power. That eventually those are the ones that will inherit the earth. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Once again, it's building on that. If you are the poor in spirit and you mourn over those and you know that you've got power but you don't abuse it, why? Because you're really hungering and thirsting to have that right relationship and to live righteously. So all of these things build upon each other here in the Beatitudes. Probably the most radical of these, as I've said before, is blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, the pure heart, it doesn't just mean that you're ethically pure, but that your mind, the heart was the place. The decisions you make are in harmony with God and God's desire. you won't have to be afraid to look at God. And in the ancient Middle East, to look on the face of a god was to invite disaster and destruction. You couldn't handle it. Even back in the Old Testament, Jacob, when his name's changed to Israel, he's absolutely shocked after wrestling with the angel all night long. Then the angel leaves the next morning after blessing him and changing his name to Israel, which means he who struggles with God. He named the name of the place Peniel. He said, "For I have seen God and yet I'm alive." All of these speak of relationship. And building relationship. Relationship vertically and then horizontally. Now, if that happens, if you try to do that, what's going to happen? Jesus is a realist. This isn't pie in the sky. If you try to be these people, then what's going to happen in the world? What's happening now when people try to be those things? Blessed are those who are persecuted. Why? Because they're righteous and for righteousness' sake. This is the kingdom of heaven. Verse 11, he says, "Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for the same way they persecuted the prophets." That's Jesus' statement of reality. If you seek to be these things, then you need to know. If you seek to be these things, you need to know somebody, somewhere in the world is not going to like it, and they're going to persecute you for it. And even if you do it humbly and low-key, somebody out there is going to say, "Oh, you old holy roller, get away from here." And so Jesus doesn't. Here we often think, and unfortunately a lot of folks in my particular vocation try to make people think, "Oh, if you do all this stuff, everything's just going to be great." No, Jesus says right here, if you're really going to do it, you need to take it seriously, because guess what? It's going to cost you. It's not going to be a nice, easy ride. And it's not even a nice, easy ride just in the church. Yeah. The easy part is to accept Him and to say, and to know that He's there and we can follow Him. But a yoke, oftentimes, most of the time back then, although occasionally it was, but most of the time back then, who was a single yoke used, or were most of the time it was a double yoke? You get one of those double yokes, you got more cholesterol. No. It was a double yoke. And if we go with Him and we are yoked with Him, the yoke is easier for us because He's there with us and carrying it. But that also means we got to go with Him. And that's really one of the harder things for us to do, is to truly go with Him. So Jesus very realistically says, "Okay, I really want you. And I want you to do these things. And I want you to be multiply blessed, manifold blessings. But in order to get them, you got to do something. It's not just enough to read it and memorize the scripture and say, 'Oh, isn't that nice?'" And that's where it's hard. That's where it's hard for me, because at times that I don't want to do some of the things that I need to do. Or you get tired. And you say, "Well, can we just put it off?" Jesus says, "No, you got to keep going." He then talks about, after the beatitude, images of the community. If we are indeed, if as His disciples, we learn these things and we do these things, then what should the community be like? Images of the faith community? You're the what? Salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth, or you're the what? Light of the world. You're a city on a hill. A lamp on a lampstand, that's right. Now, notice something here that's a little bit different. And I really haven't looked at closely at the book here lately. But notice, so he may say this, but notice something here. Jesus doesn't say, you must try to be the salt of the earth. You need to try to be the light of the world. What does Jesus say? And actually, in the Greek text, it just says, you, salt of the earth. Verb's kind of implied. But you are the salt of the earth. If you are my follower, then you already are this. Now grow and act like it. Don't try to be. You are. Why? Because we're blessed with God's grace. We can't be the salt of the earth without God's grace. We can't be the light of the world without God's grace. We can't be the city on the hill without God's grace. We're to grow in maturity and faithfulness so that we become more of who we already are in Jesus. So if we accept Jesus immediately, we are the salt of the earth. How does that make you feel? Honey, let me be your salty dog. A lot of different meanings to that song.
Are we expected to boldly go where no man has gone before as far as the I knew you'd get it. But I sometimes feel when we see on TV and such, these missionaries have been caught, you know, and they're being held for ransom or whatever.
Right.
That it kind of puts us in a bind or something like that. And is there, I guess there's got to be a certain assessment. Is their work worth it, or were they not thinking what they did and where they went and all that? And, you know, sometimes, well, they meet with death and stuff like that. I know that's a certain martyrization, but does the net worth of what they did, you know, really plant it in that area or something, or is it all for nothing? Do we need to assess something like that when...
And what is the worth of one's soul?
Yeah.
What is the worth of one soul?
Do they get one soul even sometimes?
Well, and we don't know. We're to plant. Paul says, you know, some plant, some water, and others harvest. We need to be prudent. There are guidelines for those kinds of things. But at the same time, Jesus says, you are to be my martyrios. And we get word martyr and we think, okay, that's we die for our faith. But word martyr in Greek, martyrios, simply means witness. Even to the ends of the age. We are to witness, whether we witness dying because of that witness or whether we witness and we die at 110. I'm giving Irene Lawson several more years. I didn't want to toss out her name at 104. But or whether we die at 110 years old, we are to be witnesses one way or another. And boldly, to boldly go where no man has ever gone before, well, sometimes we do that in going foreign, but, you know, your next door neighbor might be going boldly where nobody else has ever gone. Or maybe in your own family to boldly go where nobody else wants to go because somebody's tried, they've been slapped down.
This chief who had done the killing did convert to Christianity. And, you know, I guess there's a certain worth in there for sure and everything else. And he actually became a witness years later and everything else about, you know, what he had done.
So what's the worth of one soul? Jesus said that the shepherd leaves the 99 and goes and looks for the one that's lost. The 99's... What was there was a song I was reading one time. It said the 39 safely sat in the shelter of the fold, meaning inside the church, and never went out.
You got to worry that you go after one, the other 99 might go somewhere.
Yeah, well, but you know, I think that you know, it's a very valid question that we you know, we're supposed to go and do these things, but some people have that call to go and risk life and limb somewhere else, and yet some people have that call to maybe not risk life or limb, unless these days it seems in Piedmont or in Spartanburg or Pels. Now, risk life or limb going to somebody that's maybe even in the family. You may not risk life or limb, but you may risk death of relationships. You may risk you know, being ostracized or what else. But and boldness, I think, is not so much that you're going to stand on the street corner and somebody comes by and you're going to say, whap, right between the eyes and open it up and say, okay, now. But boldness, yeah, that would be pretty bold. But boldness may simply be the small kind word that you repeatedly speak or the action that you repeatedly do, even though it's rejected, but you do it anyway because you care. And the boldness is very simply in doing the action, even though it may seem insignificant, because you care and letting the person know that you care. So, you know, there's boldness, it depends. But I think that that call, Jesus says, you know, you are the salt of the earth. You're to change it. Salt preserves. Salt flavors. But salt can only preserve and flavor if what? Or if it's applied. That's right. If it's applied. Leave it off of food and you're going to feel like you're on the heart floor at the hospital. Everything's bland. But, you know, we're to help. But only if the salt comes in contact with the food can it really flavor. Only if we come in contact with the rest of the world. You know, that's one of the things that's really over the decades has really just kind of floored me sometimes when I think about. And I know some people are called to that meditation, but the monks who read this stuff and everything, and then they run off and cloister themselves and never talk to each other and never go outside the walls, and they just sit there and meditate and pray. How are they being the salt of the earth? Now, I'm not belittling prayer, but how are they being? You know, it's kind of like in the monastery where one monk was chosen once a year to speak. The rest of the time they had to be in silence. And this one year, the monk's name was drawn. He stood up and he said, I think the food in this place is horrible. Sat down. Yeah. One year later to the day, another monk's name was drawn. He stood up and said, I think the food here is good. A year later to the day, another monk's name was drawn. And he stood up and he said, I'm packing my bags and I'm leaving here because all y'all do is fight. And yeah. But I think, you know, we have to be prudent. I don't think, you know, the guy's standing out there getting ready to shoot somebody and you say, well, hold on here. I want to talk to you about Jesus and walk right up to him. But I think, you know, you have to be prudent about how you go about it. But at the same time, Jesus challenges us to make that contact. However that contact is needed. And that's tough. I mean, you know, I met some doorknobs in my day, but I will write notes, I will go see people, etc. But I'm not much of one to walk through the neighborhood and just knock on doors, now, especially these days because most people don't want you knocking on the door. And when a Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons come to my door, they wish they'd never knocked.
I don't want them knocking on my door, you know. But I mean, I've got my own place here.
Right. Yeah, but you may see an opportunity, and you might wonder, you might see them out at the mailbox and speak, and it just leads to conversation. I think a lot of times, instead of just running up somebody and start talking about Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit and all this other kind of stuff, is you talk to them, you get them in conversation and see where things are, and then you know, you become friendly with them before you run right up to them. Of course, you might not want to run right up to them these days, you know, with with the CWPs. But I do think we have to do that. And effectiveness is not dependent on size. And Sale says effectiveness is not dependent on size, popularity, or visibility. It's a matter that you make that contact. You make that contact. You live your life as a light in the world, not betraying our distinctive identity. The church is to be a beacon of hope and peace and justice and love. And by justice, we don't mean justice as in rules, regulations, and I'm going to penalize you. Justice here is being fair, being just, treating people justly. So how do we do this and how do we judge folks? Jesus talks about the law. In fact, in verses 17 and following, how do we evaluate? Well, we need to have a greater righteousness than simply the letter of the law. Jesus talks about the letter of the law, doesn't he? You've heard it said to the men of old, you shall not kill. Literally, it's you shall not commit murder. Because the covenant codes allowed for other things, including sometimes I tell students and others who say, oh, we need to go back to the Deuteronomic law. We need to go back to the law in Exodus. I say, we'd certainly have a whole lot fewer teenagers. Because in Exodus, in the covenant codes, it said, anyone who curses father or mother shall be put to death. Anyone who strikes father or mother shall be put to death. There'd be a lot of folks wouldn't survive the teenage years. But, you know, the letter of the law is not necessarily what it's about. It's the heart of the law. Getting behind, getting to the basics of the law, to evaluating these things. Jesus gets to the intention or the heart. And it's still, you shall not kill. That's still a good general guideline. But, he says, and we talked about this before, if you hate your brother, what's going to happen? We talked about it. Hatred. You keep it inside, eventually it's going to boil over and show up. You're going to insult somebody, and then they're going to have to do you one better, and then, well, you can't get one over on me, and I'm going to do you one better, and back and forth. Next thing you know, breaks out into a fight. Jesus says what's in here coming out, and that's what he's talking about with the Beatitudes and blessedness. The blessedness is not something that's external, it's something that starts internally and comes out and works its way out. It's something that transforms. The letter of the law can be a vicious cycle. And if we had a board here, I'd draw a circle with, make it look like an Easter egg. I'd say, what's that? And somebody would say, oh, that's an Easter egg. I said, no, it's a vicious circle. It's a circle with teeth. But you know, that's the letter of the law can be a vicious cycle. It can be a vicious circle that can chew you up. But the intention of Jesus is that the heart, to transform human hearts, and then you don't need the letter of the law when human hearts are transformed. You've heard it said to those, to the men of old, you shall not commit adultery. Well, you still don't commit adultery. I always think it's interesting that the commandment, do not commit adultery, is right after you shall not commit murder. I generally say, you know, I mean, that one not only does it tear up the family, but it might lead to number seven. Number six is honor your father and mother. Number seven is do not commit murder. Number eight is do not commit adultery. It might lead to number seven. Murder. But, you know, other things too. But here, you know, but I say to you, if you look at another person with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery already. And you need to repent of that. Transform. Change the spirit. You've heard it said to the men of old, an eye for an eye, and tooth for tooth, limb for limb, stripe for stripe. Jesus says, but don't resist an evildoer. If somebody hits you on the right cheek, turn the left. Of course, I've said to you all before, then you run out of cheeks. What do you do? But it was the backhand. To hit someone on the right cheek was give the back of the hand. That was an extreme insult. But Jesus said, don't retaliate. But rather than retaliate, pray for them and go the extra mile. If somebody asks you for your coat, give them your cloak also. In other words, be deferential towards others and show that spirit. Now, that doesn't mean be a doormat. But it also means to look at how you can transform not only your heart, but hopefully the hearts of somebody else being transformed. In fact, he says that we have to try to be perfect. That is, to respond to other people, even our enemies, with the same kind of compassion and maturity and perfection that God responds to us. And you can agree or disagree, and some of y'all already know this because I've said it before in different ways, but I'm a firm believer that when Judas came into the garden, Jesus was there to die for Judas every bit as much as he was to die for me or anybody else in that crowd. Because if he wasn't there to die for somebody like Judas, then he wasn't there to die for anybody. Because how many times do we betray Jesus in the things we say or do? Or for Simon Peter, how many times do we deny Jesus in the things we say or do in our lifetimes? Now, that's not saying that I know where Judas is. Only God and Judas know that for sure. But Jesus died for people just like Judas. Or he didn't die for any of us. That transforming love. To be perfect is to respond to other people, even our enemies, with a kind of compassion and desire for good that expresses the way God responds to the world. By the way, I wish I'd said that originally, but it's a quote from Tom Long, New Testament theologian. When Jesus says here, "You shall be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect," he is saying we are to respond to other people, even our enemies, with a kind of compassion and desire for good that expresses the way God responds to the world. And in chapter 6, he talks about genuine spirituality. Genuine piety for Jews was what? To really be religious and pious as a Jew, what were the three major requirements? Giving alms, praying, fasting. And guess what? Here in chapter 6, Jesus responds to those. Beware of practicing your piety, your religiosity before men in order to be seen by them. For truly then you will have no other reward. Do not be like the hypocritos, the hypocrites, the play actors, who love to let people see what they're giving. So when you give alms, give it in secret. Of course, if you do it to be praised, then that's the only reward you got. God doesn't reward that. And when you pray, don't stand on the street corners and pray loud, long prayers like the hypocritos, the hypocrites do, in order to be seen by others and praised by them, because that's the only reward they get. But when you pray, pray to your Father in secret. Now, that doesn't mean you don't do public prayer. But if you're uncomfortable praying publicly, don't pray publicly. If you're worried about what somebody else is going to think, and if you stumble over words, don't pray publicly. Because you're breaking up that whole relationship. And that's what prayer is. It's communal relationship. Dallas Willard says, Jesus called his disciples to pray to an audience of one. The audience to whom we are offering is really not each other. And it's really not folks out there. The audience for what we give in our prayer and our almsgiving and our fasting or any other religious duties is whom? Who's the audience of one? God. God. We're to practice our piety, not for praise, but to change us so that we can be more like Jesus. I mean, the model prayer. What would it mean if the world, Jesus says, so pray then like this, "Our Father, the one in the heavens, let your name be made holy. Let your kingdom come to pass, let your will come to pass, as in heaven, also upon earth. Give us today the bread for the day, or our daily bread. and forgive us our debts, just like we also have forgiven those who are indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. What would the difference be if we really prayed and meant and got the essence of that prayer? Especially, what would the difference be in the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of the earth? Okay. That's what we're actually asking for, is that God would exercise His will and His power and His kingdom here, just like it's there. And what a difference that would make, right? Be a place without wars. Not so sure that we'd have 24 karat gold streets, but it'd be a place of peace. That's right. If it were that way, the tension between the kingdom of heaven and the earthly realm were done away with, it would be grand. But in the meantime, when we live with that tension, does that mean that we back off the world and back off trying to change the world? No. It means that the community of faith then needs to become more like the kingdom of heaven. Not lording it over others, but so that others would be able to see and experience the possibilities of relationships in community. In fact, the relationships he speaks of here are in community, not separate. Now, I've said before on several occasions, and you'll probably get tired of hearing it after a while, but growing up, popular song. When I was growing up, coming through school and high school, no man is an island, no man walks alone. Each man's joy is joy to me, each man's grief is my own. We all need each other, so I will defend each man as my brother, each man as my friend. And I cannot recall anymore which musical it was in. But it speaks to that whole thing of, we are in community. Notice, our Father, give us our daily bread. And that us is not, okay, give it to me, but not to Ed. It's communal. Give us, all of us, that which is necessary. Forgive us our debts. Not just forgive me, but don't forgive him because I don't like him kind of thing. Or don't forgive her because she did something to me a long time ago, so I don't want you to forgive her. I've actually had a couple of students before to say, I don't want to forgive somebody else. They did such and such to me, and I don't want to forgive them. I said, well, but, yeah, we oftentimes don't, but Jesus said that's something, it's a necessity for us to do. Well, I don't want to. I said, well, then what's the result with Jesus? Oh, he's forgiven me. Yeah. And we laugh at that, but how many times in our lives have we thought that way? Well, I think sometimes the not forgetting part keeps you from going back into it again. You know, some people get caught in that vicious circle. But notice it's forgive us our debts. By the way, it says like we forgive others. So we could be in trouble. As I've said before here, and I say it every time I teach a New Testament class and we get here, I say, just be careful because you just might get what you pray for and that might not be so good. Because if you only half forgave somebody, that's the best you're going to get out of God if he goes by this prayer. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven. Community. We forgive first before we ask for forgiveness. That's the hard one, isn't it? We want to be forgiven and all. And if I happen to think of forgiving this person, or if I run into them later, I might if they say they're really sorry. But this is tough stuff. It's hard stuff. And do not bring us to the time of trial, but rescue us from the evil one. Or do not bring us to temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. It's a recognition of vulnerability. We're praying that God will give us strength to avoid sin and the strength and the guidance to overcome sin, to live to the other side. By the way, it's interesting that Jesus personifies evil here. Deliver us to Poneru, from the evil one. Recognition that evil is not just something in general out there, but evil does have a force and a face. We got to get next door. Choir practice, because I've run over 2 minutes already, 2.5, almost 3. And I wasn't going to do that. No, I was going to quit early. It's not this core curriculum kind of stuff that Jesus puts out here, as he calls it, core curriculum. It's basic stuff, and it's stuff we hear all the time, but it's so hard to do. Because it's not just that we do it once. The hard part is it's supposed to be a daily operation. And sometimes we either get tired or we get caught up in other things, or we just kind of put it on the back burner and forget about it for a while. And that's not an easy thing to accomplish. But when we do that, then we are like the wise man that builds his, that hears the commandments and then does by building our lives. That's the house. Building our lives upon the rock foundation. As opposed to, much as I hate to admit it, if I build my life based on what I would always want and based on my own strength, it might be quicksand, not just the sand out on the ocean. But next time we'll move on to the next session, but that next time will be 2 weeks from now. Next Sunday night, I understand it's supposed to be some clown down there at Grove Station Baptist Church. Next Sunday night is the fifth Sunday night service. Monies that will be taken up there in the offering will be given, used by the Piedmont Ministerial Association in the area to help folks that are in need. I hope it's going to prove to be an interesting evening. We shall see. Usually, you know, a different choir sings, but Piedmont Methodist Church, the choir that's going to sing there can't do it, so the Grove Station Baptist Church is going to sing. Ooh, that might be a precedent. Maybe we get our choir to sing next time it's here. I do remember precedents a lot of times. I'm very careful about setting precedents. Because they can come back to get you. But thank you all. And anytime you want to chime in, make me shut up for a while and talk, that's fine too. So we can all learn together. God bless you. Go in peace.